I'm Darnia Samuels. Please be safe and thank you for listening.
Rosemary in the bag and tied around my handy for my protection. I'm walking around with a big old sack on my back, coming in your direction. What kind of tea do you like? I got it. I'm the medicine man, herb from the land. I'm the herb man, come see me. Oh, I'm the herb man, you all come see me. Hey, rosemary, calm your nerves, got peppermint leaf to get rid of my fever. I keep periwinkle to get some love now. Whoa, I got hug me clothes to make my backbone strong. Gold cola tonic for my blood, and dandelion for my bones, y'all. I can leave. Keep away flies. Hot Lady Cayenne for my pressure. Oh, I'm the herb man, come see me. Oh, I'm the herb man, you all come see me. Get the children out the way now. No, you can't smoke this, sir. This is for salad. Yes, yeah, salad.
And good afternoon, and welcome to another episode of To Your Health. To Your Health is a program designed not only to inform, but also to turn your life and health around. And I'm Dr. Theodore Watkins, the host of To Your Life, and I'm here with my able assistant, Mr. Frank Smith. How are you doing today, Brother Frank?
Doing fine, Doc. I'm excited. Hey,
man, this is weather, I'm excited weather getting again. Good, man. I'm getting excited, brother. Get ready to get out in that yard.
Yes.
You know, we've been talking about this dream that we have of a community that is healthy and vibrant and working together. You know, but the unfortunate thing is that we practice destructive behavior. And I believe part of it is because we don't really appreciate our purpose. We've lost sight of our purpose. We're focused on, you know, I mean, it's good to make money and be successful, but I think we're focused too much on that. And we need to start looking at the higher purpose of what we can do, not just for ourselves, our family, but for mankind. You know, early in my practice, patients would come to me because they wanted to do something different. You know, they were tired of being sick and they recognized that those pills and the traditional approach to medicine that they had was not getting them well, you know? And these patients oftentimes would start my lifestyle program, which is a God-centered lifestyle program. And they would, in many, if not most cases, get good results. You know, their diabetes would come under control. They would get off their pills and injections. Their blood pressures would normalize. They would start losing those stubborn pounds. Their skin would regain radiance and youthful glow. But then, Brother Frank, in many instances, they would start drifting back to that old lifestyle, you know? And of course, being project, my first response was anger and then a little sadness, you know, because I said, these rascals just want to die, you know? But it didn't seem that reality made any difference. And I made the mistake, and I even asked God, why do these rascals need to die, want to die? And the answer I got was, they don't want to die. Then why don't they change? They can't change. Can an Ethiopian change his skin? Can a leper spot? Can neither can someone who's doing evil do good? So Lord, they just supposed to die? By beholding, we become changed. You know, and I got started understanding this concept of beholding and becoming. And maybe we've talked about it before, but we'll talk about it more in the future. But I learned that we have to stop looking at ourselves, and we got to turn our eyes on God, on a higher power, on a higher purpose for our lives. And if we do that, then we can change. You know, and so we want to talk about that transformation. You know, I did actually, it was a sermon, my body transformed, my mind renewed, and I did it because when I looked at this thing, 9 out of 10 Americans, not African American, Americans were dying of preventable and reversible diseases. And of course, we know that it is much worse in our community. And the reality is that we don't really have to die now. These are preventable diseases. Mm-hmm. And I became sort of mesmerized by this process we call change and decision making. You know, and so I've asked Dr. Kennedy to come back with us today, because I want to look at this thing again. What makes Dr. Kennedy one person face an extraordinary disease and decide, like Frank did, to take charge of their life and their health, and then another person, like perhaps many of the folk listening, become victims of the system. Mm-hmm. Now, as you recall, Dr. Kennedy has several PhDs, a couple master's degrees to throw in there. He pastored for over 50 years. He's been married about 54 years, you know, to an outstanding, good looking, smart, fantastic cooking wife.
Yeah.
And I know, because I've sat at their table on several occasions, Brother Frank, and it's healthy and it's good. But Dr. Kennedy, welcome back.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much.
So what makes a person decide to do right versus a person who decides to become a victim?
Well, let me give you the first answer. I don't know.
All right. That's a good answer.
So let me move on. First of all, how does a person conceptualize of themselves? How do you see yourself? Who do you see yourself as you want to be? It's very unfortunate that there are individuals who are going through life and they have no concept of who they would like to be. So I talked about the mirror image.
Uh-huh.
And I do not know if I have been in a mirror room. You know, when they go in a mirror room and there are some mirrors with curvatures and there are some mirrors with that. And you can also do the same thing on your telephone these days. You take a picture of yourself and you can get the face long, you can get the face big, you can get the face small and so forth. But when you stand before a mirror and you look at yourself, you have to determine whether what you're seeing in the mirror is really who you are, or you can decide to fix yourself so that you can look better in the mirror. And you know that when we dress to go out, and we want to look good, you go before the mirror, or my mirror is not only a mirror in the room, but my mirror is also my wife. You know, she comes around, she straightens me up, and sometimes she's straightening me up. Sometimes she's in my hearing right now, but sometimes when she is straightening me up, I say, what she thinks, that I'm a baby? In other words, but she's very careful to make sure my presentation, mm-hmm. my presentation. So let me begin there by saying it starts in the mind, a projection of an image that you would like to see of yourself. Mm-hmm. One of the things that is rather interesting is that there are individuals, they do not take care of themselves very well physically. They do not have enough rest. They do not take enough physical exercise. They do not eat in the right way. They do not sleep in the right way. We'll get back to some of those things. They do not work on the toning of their body. And yet they will put on, if you don't mind me using, if it's not sounding pejorative to you, yet they will dress in all of this kind of jewelry in order to be able to look good, but they are not concerned about their body, how their body look otherwise. And they will do all the kind of things with their hair. And I hope this is not being prejudiced against women, because there are men also who haven't taken care of themselves, but they think that just throwing on a piece of clothing that is very expensive is going to make all of the difference. Because what I'm talking about is what we are doing to our bodies. How do I want to see myself, my body, which begins in the mind? How do I imagine myself? How do I dream that I want to be?
And that's where we want to go, because what happens is, I've said many times, and I think I'm correct that most people have some knowledge that some things that they're doing is destructive. All
yes,
right.
Sir.
You know, and what I've come to realize is that the physical health decisions that we make depend on at least two factors. One is our thinking and one is our feeling.
Yes.
One is our thinking and one is our feeling, you know. And when we look at thinking, we think about knowledge, we think about gathering of facts, you know, and then whereas in feeling is more of an emotional state, you know, how do I feel about a situation, or how do I relate to the facts of that situation, you know, and these two sometimes clash, Doc, is that correct?
Very much so. They clash. Because I wanted to take you even somewhere else.
All right.
One of the things, let me take you to just where you are going, because it's right back. Who am I? It's a question. Who do I want to be able to be?
All right.
And so I'm taking you now to a little bit different, deeper section of what you're projecting. It is that I may see, Mr. Brown around the corner, or Miss Mavis around the corner. And there are a number of things that I am trying to be like the other person.
So all right.
For you, when I come to you as a doctor, you are going to tell me, you're going to measure what my, is it BMI you talk about? You will tell me what my BMI is supposed to be. What my body fat, is that correct?
Yes.
What is it supposed to be? You met my body mass. You look at my height, you look at my profile, and you're able to say, this is what you're supposed to be. Unfortunately, and this is where I'm going, that there are individuals, they are not prepared to do the self-evaluation and understand what your capacity is, so they become bulimic. I just wanted to mention those terms. That's why I'm going there. Or they become what you call the other one, bulimia, or what's the other one? Anorexic.
Anorexic. Mm-hmm.
So they become anorexic because they're trying to be like somebody that they see on the television screen in Hollywood. They want to look like Is it Britney Spears or what's the other one now, the who's the popular one now? They may want to be like somebody who they are not, or they want to look like Beyonce. But we have to know that I can't be just like another person, either physically or mentally. I need to be who I need to be. But that image, I need to be able to sense what God has given to me in terms of my capacity. What is my body form? What is my genetic structure? What are some of those things? And you don't have to be a great scientist in order to learn about who you are. You can begin to learn about who you are. Sit down with Dr. Watkins. Listen to him carefully. Let him do an evaluation for you. And it's easier for you to do one evaluation and then begin to develop the kind of things that can be helpful to you in terms of a better eating habit, exercise program, you know, rest, dimensions, and so forth. And we're going to talk about discipline, learning discipline. But here I begin to talk about evaluation. Evaluation, knowing who you are, evaluating who you are, imaging who you are.
Good. Outstanding. Today we're talking with Dr. D.K. Kennedy, a personal friend of mine and mentor of mine, and we're talking about this whole process of change. How do we get to where we want to be? If you have some comments or questions, give us a call. The number is 202-388-0992. That's 202-388-0992.
Hey, Doc, let me do that for you. 202-588-0893.
0892. Lord have mercy. Too much weekend. let's go to the phone to somebody who knows the number. Yes, Brother Rick, what's happening?
Good day, Brother Watkins, and good day to
you. Are you still on the phone, Kennedy? Rick?
Can you hear me okay?
Rick was calling us from Germany, so I wanted to get him on. But anybody else want to call 202-588-0892. Oh, okay. What's happening?
Can you hear me okay now?
Rick,
are you there?
You can't hear me. You can't hear me.
Yeah, we can't hear him.
We can't hear him.
Hey, try all back right. Later.
As they get that worked out, when they get that worked out, we'll come to you, Brother Rick. So, the reason all this that we're talking about is so important is people are literally dying.
Oh yeah.
Because of these decisions. People are sick, are incapacitated, are disabled because of decisions that they're making. And they're going against their self-interest. They're going against what they know to be right, and yet they're making these decisions. And I feel that these decisions depend more on the feeling than they do on the thinking. The facts don't really, in many cases, count. You know, people want to think what they want to think. Do we have you now, Rick?
Can you hear me now, brother?
All right, we still don't have Brother Rick. He may hang up and call back. But the facts don't really count. You know, what a person feels seems to count more than the facts. You know, but yet that is affecting how we think. The Bible says, "As a man thinketh, so is he." So this thinking is so important. But how we think is affected by our feelings. My brother, help us with that.
All right, let me pick that up a bit. If our emotions override our thinking.
Mm.
Then that's where we begin to run into a lot of trouble.
Mm-hmm.
There is, God has given us a mind, and the mind are the brains that have different parts. Part of the brain deal with a rational sensibility, the front part. The emotion is towards the lower part, towards the back part, towards the lower part, down towards the ears, where you have the different glands, the pituitary glands, and so forth. I'm not going to go into a lot of biology today. Doc, it's your job to go into the biology of the brain. But the fact is, when things do not pass through the upper part of the brain that help us to think through what we are doing, and we are acting purely on the basis of emotions. Let me give an example. Every time I feel to take a soda, if I rush for the soda, let me give another example. Sugar is something that we feel for it, we desire it. It works more on the basis of our emotion than on the basis of a reason, because we know that sugar is a poison. Sugar is a big poison. Condensed milk, sweet milk. You mix sugar and cow's milk together and you have put the biggest amount of poison in your system. And we know that, okay? And other foods as well, it is known. But your desire, your body likes sugar, doesn't it? Likes the taste of sugar. Your tongue likes the taste of sugar.
And when you addictive.
Yeah, you become addicted, you got it. When you are trying to be able to overcome sugar taste, you do know that while your mind is telling you of what its danger is, and that you need to regulate yourself, yet that addiction that has been developed, sugar addiction, we know that our body is calling out, give me more of it, give me more of it, give me more of it. Mm-hmm. You know that, don't you? Okay. So here is the issue. Then you have to pause, evaluate, and say, what is more important? Am I just going to satisfy this emotion, or am I going to be able to regulate the emotion?
It's amazing because these feelings are converted into thoughts.
Yes.
And the thoughts are then produce words.
Yes. Right?
And then the words produce action that produces what I call flesh.
Mm.
So if we have negative thoughts, like a lot of people think that healthy foods don't taste good. So you'll get negative thoughts about the food. You get negative feeling about the food. You'll say negative words about the food. And you won't eat it, and what happens? You become sick.
Oh, yeah.
Because disease is produced, you know? And just from a I'm gonna try with Rick one more time. Brother Rick? Yes, well, yes, we can hear you now. Go ahead, my brother.
I just want to say that if Al
Sharpton, on your phone, because we can hear you for a second, and then you fade out.
Sharpton.
That's true.
You're absolutely correct. You're absolutely correct. So what enabled Al Sharpton to change?
Question. That's a good question.
You know, Doc. You know, when I back in the day when I was in the project, I was on the merry-go-round one day, and I saw this guy. His name was Roundtree, all right? And Roundtree was one of the most disgusting people I'd ever met. Roundtree didn't even respect his mama. And back in that day, if you didn't respect your mama, there was something wrong with you.
Of course.
He was constantly cussing. He was dirty, unkept, you know? And one day I saw Roundtree. He had a shirt and a tie on, a bow tie, white shirt, suit, and he wasn't cussing. And I literally got off the merry-go-round, having fun, and went over. I was a little boy. Went over, Mr. Roundtree. And he was a teenager, but probably about 18, 19 at the time. And I said, what's all this, man? All this suit and tie? And he started talking about the Honorable Elijah of Muhammad.
Okay.
And I said, okay. And went on back to my merry-go-round. A few years ago, when I thought about this change process and the fact that people seem to be having difficulty to change, my thought came the same as Rick's. You know, if Roundtree can change, anybody can change. Yeah. And what helped Roundtree to change, and at least my thought process, is that Roundtree came up against something or met something that he saw greater than himself.
Yeah.
An ideal greater than himself. And for that, he was able to change. And so if we can get people not to be, that's why I talked about, it's fine to be making money and buying nice things and you know, everybody like that. But we have to have, you know, I didn't go into medicine for money. I know you didn't go in your profession for money, right? Then, you know, there's something more important than money. And we got to get people to start focusing more on their purpose in life. I think that will help to direct the problem. What do you think?
Exactly. Well, you can have money and you don't have health.
Yeah.
And so you can have all the money in the world. And when you don't have health, the money is valueless. Of course, there are other things that are more important than money. Your spiritual life is very much more important. Your peace of mind is very much more important than money, because of the fact that you can have all the money and you be a miserable person. So all of those things, and of course, your peace of mind is going to impact your health, as well as your health impact your peace of mind. It's so important to be able to recognize that, yes, all of what we do is impacted by the mind. And of course, as we said, the emotions seeks at times to take over the mind.
Mm-hmm.
But then you have to push back on the emotions and tell the emotions that the emotion is subjected to the mind, and the mind is subjected to the higher power. The mind is subjected to God. That there's a text in the Bible that says, let this mind be in you, which was also in Jesus Christ.
So once a person can get this focus on a purpose, a person greater than himself, then he can take note, but one of the things that we find is a lot of people, I was very fortunate and I'm sure you all were too, to have people in your life that built you up, that didn't tear you down. I was a poor reader, but my mother never criticized me for my reading. My brother was an excellent reader, but my mama told me I was going to be a doctor because I said I wanted to be a doctor. She said, you're going to be one, but sometimes people feel that, I'm not worthy. I must be perfect. I'm not good enough, and they say these negative things to themselves. So these thoughts I translated the feelings, I translated the words, and that by itself becomes destructive, you know? Yep. But if you have that good feeling about who you are, where you're going, in spite of your circumstances, it doesn't matter what the circumstances is, because you are greater, or your God is greater than the circumstance. The number is 202-588-0893. I got it right this time. 202-588-0893. Give us a call with questions or comments on this whole process of change, because it's so critical. Because in order for us to change our lives, in order for us to change the lives of our family, in order for us to change the lives of our community, many of us must, if not all of us, must change, because ain't none of us perfect. I know I'm trying to get better. You know, I'm happy that I've made some progress, but I want to be better.
So Doc,
yes.
I think it's important for us to take note of a few things. One, in terms of change. So we talk about mind change.
Yes.
And in order sometimes to do the mind change, it's good to do what we call changing the routine of our lives.
Mm. All right.
And I just want to connect that. There are times when we are doing activity. Let me tell a story. I think it will lead to that. Many, many years ago, when I became an American citizen, I was not born in America, but I became an American citizen. In the 80s, in the early part of the 80s, I became an American citizen. And when I went for my citizenship, there was somebody there that was standing outside in the morning, and she was giving out the little piece of paper. After you take your fingerprint, then they give out a piece of paper, and she give out the paper, and she said, next, 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 next. Next, next, next. And when I listened to her, I paused for a little bit and I started counting. And after I had counted up to 50, then I went home and I said to my wife, I cannot believe this. This woman stays there for at least 6 hours per day. And all she is saying is next, and tear off a piece of paper. Next, tear off a piece of paper. Next, and tear off a piece of paper. I said to my wife, I don't know how that woman doesn't go crazy. Because of the fact she has framed her mind, is actually framed in the form of a piece of machine, so that her mind does not develop any elasticity. Yes. To be able to move beyond next, 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 6 hours or 8 hours a day. I think it maybe could have been eight, but I am giving 6 hours.
7 days, five to 7 days a week.
Yes, sir. You got it. You got the message. So when I heard her doing that, I began to think about when we have certain routines, we need to be able to look at what routine we are practicing, what routine we are in. And in fact, asking the question, how can we be able to change the routine so we can change our minds?
Yeah.
Because when we are programmed in the way we are, as most of us, we'll be surprised to know that human beings, we say are gregarious. You know, we tend to do the same thing. We tend to go the same place. If you go to church, you sit in the same pew. You sit at the same part of the pew. You sit with the same friend all the time. And we do that in various kind of our socialization. And we do not even realize that we are not giving ourselves an opportunity to expand who we are and to transform who we are, because we are so much into our routine.
Are we in that routine because we're comfortable in that routine?
Yes, sir. Evidently, we tell ourselves, and most individuals, We look for comfort, don't we?
Yes.
We look for comfort. And because, and but comfort is not always good, because comfort does not always make you grow.
All right. That's right.
If you are going to grow, you are going to have to be in a place of uncomfortableness. Let's say,
you know, I tell people, I remember welfare. I hated welfare.
Yes, sir.
I hated it, and I hated it so much, I decided I'm going to get off welfare and my family will never be on welfare, And so that gave me the spark, in spite of my deficiency on reading. I tell people, I learned to read in medical school, because I was so determined that I was going to do this thing, and my family would never have to worry, I tell folks, I learned to read in med school.
Yeah.
Because you can do, if you get uncomfortable enough, I gotta move in a different direction.
Yeah.
We're comfortable at being diabetic. We're comfortable at taking these medications. We're comfortable. I'm talking to people who are having 2 and 3 joint replacements, and they're comfortable with it. I don't beat them up, but man, I say, Lord, not Lord, I just can't do it.
So
I just can't do it.
So then we have to make up our minds if we want to grow and if we want to change. Change processes take pain. Take some amount of pain. It doesn't have to be extreme. And in some persons' cases, it is a little bit more extreme because of the fact that if you have tarried so long in a behavior and you need to change, or something has been in your life that has become so deep-seated, then it takes a lot more to be able to get rid of it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So that's one of the reasons we ask people, whenever you are convinced that, and you're at the point where your mind says, I think it's time to change, do not relax in the area of where you were comfortable, but begin to ask the questions, not just ask the question, how and how fast can I?
Yes.
That's why we have, when I teach strategic management, I have a theme called when, the when. First, it is the what. Secondly, it is the why. Why do I want to do something? Thirdly, is the how. How am I going to do it? And I may know those three. But then I need to come to the point when I say, when am I going to do it?
Yeah.
And the when need to be clearly calendar. I need to put it on the calendar. Mm. I need to put it in a time management chart and say, yes, I'm going to tomorrow afternoon, I'm beginning. Next morning, and here are 5 mornings per week. 3 mornings per week, I'm going to walk. 3 mornings per week, I am going to run. 3 mornings per week, I'm going to swim, or I'm going to water exercises. 3 mornings per week, I am going to work in my garden. And it's good to change the activities too. Do not just go get up and go to gym every day.
That becomes a routine.
Yes, sir. It's better to be able to go to gym some days. Then you find some time to do some reading, to be able to increase your knowledge. And if you have the capacity to do gardening, and Doc recommends, don't only sit around and say, I don't have any space around my house. Learn to do window gardening. Learn to do something. Because that is very important. I think that you're being asked to ask.
We're having this discussion about this process of change, and Doc has brought up something very, very important. And then this win thing is, as I as I think about what you're saying, you know, I'll say, we're going to do such and such. And my wife will say, well, what time or when are we going to do it?
That's right.
That when is sometimes very uncomfortable because it requires specific action. The number is 202-588-0893, 202-588-0892. Give us a call with questions or comments. We just have a few minutes to go looking at this tremendous process. Jeff Frank, what you got?
I got a question. I want to go back a little bit.
All right.
I'm an avid Bible reader, and it looks like in that, in the Bible, suffering is a part of change. Dr. Kennedy, you implied this, but do we always have to suffer? What percentage, you know?
Right. Well, you know, we are in a world of suffering.
Yes.
So it is very hard to be able to accept suffering as part of life's existence.
Mm.
But here is where, as we face suffering, there are different individuals that face suffering face life or suffering in a different way. Some individuals, they bring a lot of suffering on themselves because of the fact that the first thing that they do, I think Dr. Watkins had pointed to it early, we get up in the morning and the first thing we do is to say something negative.
Mm-hmm.
Find a complaint. Let's say you have arthritis. Let me use that one. And the first thing you get up in the morning, and every morning you get up, or in the morning you get up, the first thing you complain about is a pain in your shoulder, a pain in your back, or a pain in your foot, or a pain in... And believe it or not, you'd be surprised to know that the very moment you complain about that as your first thing, instead of saying, thank God, I got up this morning and I have some pain. That's quite a different way of framing it.
The pain lets you know that you're alive.
That's right. The pain makes you know you're alive. So there's a different way of approaching life, recognizing that your first reaction to the day should not be a complaint, but a praise. So you give a praise, then you talk about your pain, and you can be able to now begin to positively tell yourself how you're going to be able to deal with this question of pain. And sometimes pain is so very serious that you cannot even reason.
That's right.
But if you are a person who practices giving praise, practice positive ways of thinking, it helps you in these moments of suffering. That's what I can say.
And you know, those positive words,
yes,
the research has shown, actually changes the chemistry of your mind.
Yes, sir.
Changes actually the gene.
Mm.
All right? The changes the gene, the expression of the gene with words. Just like we talked about how red-seeded grapes, you know, it is epigenetic. Well, words,
yes,
can also be epigenetic.
Yes,
you know,
sir.
Can actually change. And so we have to look. But this thing, once you get that purpose, once you set that time, that when you're going to do it, I think you're then able to move on and make the change, because the mind is very, very, I mean, all of us have negative stuff that has come at us.
That's
even
right.
The most positive person has had to overcome some negative stuff.
Yeah.
All right. And one of the things that I've noticed about myself, and you know, I don't focus on the negative. I want to know when the negative is there for a purpose.
Mm.
You know, it's a problem. It needs a solution.
Mm-hmm.
And so I want to know, what is the solution to the problem?
And Doc, so you may be more, I would say, an A-type personality instead of our sanguine personality, instead of being a melancholic personality.
Yeah.
So I wanna talk to people who are more melancholic in their personalities because of the fact that such persons are not able to get up, brush their pants, and move on as fast as you are able to move on. Those there are those persons who just have that kind of personality, where they become anxious, where they become fearful, where they become feel guilty. They just come down hard on themselves. And I want to talk to such persons about how do you pick up yourself and be able to move on? Because when you learn your personality as to who you are, then you can begin to change more effectively. Even that person, you can say, you own who you are. Yeah, I'm a melancholic. Yeah, I know that.
But.
Here is what I have to do in order to be able to deal with myself. If I'm a choleric, I do know that I'm a choleric, and therefore I work hard and I work for perfection so much that I know as a choleric, the next thing I'm going to end up with a heart attack. So then, as a choleric, I have to learn, here are patterns that I have to use in order to slow down, in order to focus, in order to be more empathetic, in order to be more kind to other people in the way I speak to them. I have to learn that, because if I keep just pushing and push people away from me, I am also going to become a lonely person. And when you become a lonely person, you die.
Yes.
In isolation.
In isolation.
So if you want to be able to be a person that have some relational skills, you have to learn, if you are the kind of person that you don't have to linger around long after you fall. You can get up, brush your pants, walk away, and push hard, but be careful of being this person who, you know, there are people who say, I don't care.
They do care.
Yeah, you do care. You better start caring.
Yeah. They do care, but they don't feel that they are capable of making a difference.
Yes.
At least that's what I find. It's not that they don't care. It's just that they feel hopeless and helpless. And so they take an attitude of, I don't care. But yes, they care. You know, when we talk about shaping the mind, changing the mind, I talk about the internal environment, the external environment, and events that happen or occur in our lives.
Yes.
You know, and that internal environment starts even the way your mother felt when she was carrying you, you know. And so you come here sometimes with some asterisks by your name, you know, some things that you have to overcome. But as you overcome those things, it becomes positive. You know, I've talked about, I believe, the order of birth, you know. I've observed that the middle child often is one of the most successful children in the family because they tend to be neglected more. And so they have to learn how to get attention, and they do it by doing well. You know, am I on to something, brother?
You're okay. You're on to something. The only thing that I am also recognizing, whereas birth order is rather significant, but also birth order and life experiences also can change your birth order.
Yes.
In other words, you may be the middle child. But because of things that have happened to you in your life, as you said, you take on a personality, you take on the capacity to become a leader instead of just being that person in the center who is crying out for attention.
Yeah. The other thing I want to say is to those people who influence those parents, those instructors, those other people,
mentors,
who are leaders. We have a responsibility to nurture, to build up, you know. I have a very rough, rigorous health program, but I try never to beat my patients down when they don't do well. Instead, to praise them and tell them, you know, I'm real proud of you, even in your attempt to do well. And so we have a responsibility as a community to lift other people up, because some people are carrying heavy loads.
Yes.
And we can help them. Am I right, Brother Frank?
Yes, yes, for sure.
So as you come towards the end of your program today, I would like to encourage individuals who want to change not to just always work by themselves.
Yes.
But find a mentor. Find Dr. Ted Watkins. Reach out to him individually and personally. Do not only listen to him on radio, but find out how you can give him a call personally so that he can talk to you, because he is not just one of these medical doctors. Medical doctor. We think of individuals as medical doctors often enough because they're interested in giving you a tablet or some medicine. But I'm thinking, I said to someone some time ago, that not every medical doctor or every nurse understands the social side of medicine.
Yes.
And that's where I think that Dr. Watkins offers you. He is not only a doctor that gives you a check by putting on a stethoscope or something to be able to test your body, sending you to get an MRI, but he is an individual who is interested in your mind, interested in your relationships, interested in the fact of not, so he's not just about the body, he is about your sleep factor, your nutrition, your rest, your recreation, those aspects that can make you a much more healthy individual.
Well, thank you for those words. I certainly try to be that kind of person. But what one of the things that I'm envisioning is that we're going to come together as a community, and we're going to help people become more nurturing, because you know one of the reasons that I can give to others because people have given to me.
Thank you.
I'm where I am not because I'm so smart or I'm so blessed. I am blessed. I am smart. But I've been blessed with people who've encouraged me, who smacked me upside the head when I needed it, you know, but who didn't do it to put me down, but rather to lift me up. You know, my ninth grade teacher, man, I made 2 D's at geography and vocabulary. And I went to her, I said, why did I make these D's? She said, what do you think of the course? I said, I can't stand them. She said, that's why you made the D's. she let me stand there and pout for a minute. She said, sit down, Theodore. I'm going to tell you something, and if you learn it, you'll never have a problem with studying again. She said, always look for what you like in a course and not what you dislike. And then she said it again. Always what you like, look for what you like and what you dislike. And from the ninth grade on, first I turned those D's into B's. And from the ninth grade, I've always been able to find, and I've taken a lot of courses since the ninth grade. You understand? So we have to, as a community, we have to come together and use the talents and skills that God has given us to promote other people so that we can grow as a community.
Here, here. Thank you.
Brother Frank, any words?
Thank you, Doc, and thank you, Dr. Kennedy. You got any books that you're a prolific author?
Yes.
You got any books that you
recommend? I have a book called A Legacy of Blessings.
Mm-hmm. A Legacy of Blessings. Lord have mercy.
I have another book called Life Maps Legacy that you can get it online right now by Dr. D. Robert and S. June Kennedy, Doctors D. Robert and S. June Kennedy. However, I'm revising that book, and a lot of what I have brought out here comes from the book Life Maps Legacy. How do you map your life? And there are other books. Mm-hmm. Yes. There are other books that are called, one is called The Parental Advocacy. Okay. Parental Advocacy, you can look online for those.
Lord All right, thank you. Thank you, Mike, and thank you, Cody, our engineers. Thank you to WPFW staff. We're out.
And we're gonna see you next week.
Yep.
Yeah. I'll come back and promote my book sometimes.
I tell and a vegan, we're vegan. I and I eat from the earth and leave the animals to give birth. No deaders, no fur, no feathers. When I tell people I don't eat meat, fish or dairy, then look for me strangely. Then I realize I eat a very wide variety. Listen to Maccabee. Yo, how when me eat, them I wonder when me eat. When me tell them, say me no eat no fish, nah, no meat now. How when me eat, them I wonder when me yum. When me tell them, say that I'm a vegan, man. How when me eat, them I wonder when me eat. When me tell them, say me no eat no fish, nah, no meat now. How when me eat, them I wonder when me yum. When me tell them, say that I'm a vegan. When me know...
Good afternoon. For WPFW Washington and WBAI New York, I'm Darnia Samuels. Here are some headlines for this hour. The Trump administration is canceling 83% of programs at the U.S. Agency for International Development, or USAID, and there are strong reactions to it from both sides. For instance, Lyndon Yee, one of USAID's recently terminated employees, said that cutting 83% of the organization's programs will, quote, put lives in jeopardy, emphasizing that, quote, there's no way that that decision would not harm millions of people's lives. Yee also noted that the U.S. aid programs have benefited the United States when the country has received foreign aid, such as during the devastating fires in California. On the other side of the coin, Secretary of State Marco Rubio justified the massive cuts to the program, saying that the 5,200 contracts that have been canceled did not serve, and in some cases even harmed, the core national interests of the United States. The electricity crisis in the Gaza Strip is an ongoing and growing crisis faced by nearly 2 million residents of the Strip, with regular power supply being provided only for a few hours a day on a rolling blackout schedule. Adding to the issue, Israel has now ordered an immediate halt to Gaza's electricity supply. Although the effects of the shutdown are not immediately clear, Israel does provide power to the only desalination plant in central Gaza. This plant is responsible for removing salt and other minerals from the water to make it safe to drink for the territory of more than 2 million people. The electricity halt comes after Israel announced last week that it will stop the entry of all humanitarian aid into the enclave to pressure Hamas into accepting an extension of the first phase of their ceasefire agreement, which ended last week. The celebration of life for legendary singer Roberta Flack will be held today in New York at the Abyssinian Baptist Church on West 138th Street. The service, which begins at 4 p.m., will be streamed live online at robertaflack.com. Roberta Flack is regarded as one of the greatest songstresses of our time, who remains unparalleled in her ability to tell a story through her music. Flack, who was discovered while performing in D.C., went on to become the first solo artist to win the Record of the Year Grammy for two consecutive years, in 1973 for The First Time Ever I Saw Your Face, and in 1974 for Killing Me Softly with his song. She passed away on Monday, February 24th, at age 88, after a battle with ALS, or Lou Gehrig's disease. To the D.C. area, the Maryland and Virginia Health Departments have revealed that a positive measles case has been found in a Howard County, Maryland resident who traveled internationally through Dulles Airport in Virginia. Those agencies are warning people who could have been exposed. Measles is highly contagious and can spread through the air by means of breathing, coughing, and sneezing. The virus can also remain on surfaces for a time. It's reported that this measles case in Maryland is not associated with the measles outbreaks in Texas and New Mexico, which has seen at least 200 cases and 30 cases separately. Meanwhile, also in Maryland, two students in Prince George's County have died from the flu, one in Laurel and another in Capitol Heights. Superintendent Millard House II says the school district has taken immediate proactive measures to slow the spread of the flu, including enhanced cleaning, temporary masking at schools in case of an outbreak, and on-site flu vaccination.